Everybody has to come from somewhere. If you don't come from somewhere, find somewhere. Himself. Caroline's shattering defeat of cocky, disagreeable David Petrie in the debate about Sharia law was, Angela told her, the first great victory of their new life in Barker. If we stand together, my love, who can resist us? The weeks after Angela's decision to leave Pebbleton had been the most extraordinary blur. Angela Unbound was like an Old Testament angel, tangled hair flying, colourful wings whirring everywhere at once. Her new parish was just outside Carrow's constituency boundary, and it quickly became clear to Angela after meeting the curate, the verger, and some of the pitifully sparse regular congregation that this was a community in desperate need of leadership. This part of Barker was mainly composed of narrow red brick terraces built in the glory days when the town was world famous for its shoemakers. Once, Barker's annual fair had been a magnet for traders and performers from across the Midlands. Even between the wars, Barker had been a thriving centre of manufacturing, typewriters, vacuum cleaners and bicycles, which had lured Scots and Welsh workers. But, badly hit by the Luftwaffe in 1941, the town's factories never fully recovered. The shoes were made more cheaply abroad, first in East Germany and Poland, and later in China. Typewriters gave way to personal computers. Bicycles arrived by container from the Far East. Meanwhile, waves of immigration from Pakistan's Swat Valley and Sylhet in Bangladesh, where foresight about global manufacturing developments was in short supply, had brought new communities to Barker. For obvious reasons, they rarely got on. By the 21st century, Barker was as well known for its gangs as it had once been for its fairs. The chapels built by the Welsh and the late Victorian Anglican churches had mostly been converted to housing or to mosques. Angela had arrived early for her interview and had chosen not to book into the only hotel in the area. Her inquiries had revealed that it was run by one of the church wardens, but found a bed and breakfast. She had walked the streets, noting how many families still gathered on the front steps of their terraced houses, and observing the graffiti and the abandoned toys, bikes and prams in the gardens. She had seen how the Bangladeshi women huddled close to the walls as they walked along and shivered in the cold. Pebbleton, it wasn't. But there seemed to be more chip shops and fried chicken outlets than curry houses. As she walked, Angela felt a curious and intense physical sensation. A hot, prickling feeling began behind her knees and then ran up the backs of her legs, rushing up her torso and neck before crackling around her scalp. She gasped and felt herself flooded by a feeling of delight and peace. "I am being called by the Lord," she said to herself. "This is how it feels." There was apparently a shortlist, though Angela never met any of the other candidates. The interview panel met her in the church hall. They were mostly women in their 60s or older, plus a couple of bulky men in suits, the verger, and a younger man who must have been the archdeacon. They seemed tough, weathered people, but friendly enough. After a short prayer imploring God to give them wisdom in their judgments, Angela was asked about her ambitions for Christianity in a town like Barker and the differences she expected working here, as compared to a small rural living in Devon. She was warned that the parsonage was in reality a two-bedroom brick house next to a general store. This in itself had put off another of the candidates. She was asked about her children and whether they would go to the local school. "Perhaps," she answered, "she would have to see." As to the parsonage, the panel were aware that her partner was the Member of Parliament for Barker and she expected that they would buy a house together, big enough to accommodate both her family and her work on pastoral matters. There was a ripple of approval in the room. She wasn't asked about her sexuality or her views on women bishops. She got the distinct impression that neither mattered here. These people wanted someone who could rally the faint-hearted and spread the gospel in these forgotten streets. She was chosen, as she knew she would be, as she felt she already had been. 3 days later, she had had an offer accepted for a four-bedroomed house recently built on land reclaimed from a railway marshalling yard. It had a neat garden, though the new lawn was suspiciously bumpy and there were already cracks in some of the ceilings. Entirely happy, she called Lady Broderick, who turned out to know the Archdeacon, and who had perhaps put in a word for her, and asked her to send the boys up by train. There was a grammar school in the next town, and Angela, still brimming with flaming certainty that the Lord was with her, knew they would be offered places there, and that they'd like it. Caroline, when she arrived at the new house for the first time, found herself feeling selfishly jealous. Angela had already crammed the few bookshelves with her dusty Thackeray and Dickens paperbacks and the broken-backed works of radical theology, feminism and Euro-communism left over from her university days. She had put up a painting of Pebbleton she'd bought for a song at a charity auction. The furniture had been hurriedly purchased from an IKEA outside Milton Keynes and was still mostly unassembled. Compared to Caro's cosy flat in London, it seemed nothing to do with her life. But seeing Angela's radiant face, she pushed aside her misgivings and kissed her thanks. In bed that night, Angela lay on top of Caro, her nose burrowed into her sweet-smelling neck as they hugged tightly. A new adventure. Together. Against the world. Us. Health and